Accession number 28756, Reel 3.
So if we go then now to the training on the two bridges, where were they and what
down at Exeter.
Yeah, whereabouts?
There's two bridges down at Exeter, and I can't tell you exactly where they are, but I do know that there is a plaque on them now, which states that these two bridges were used by the airborne forces during the war for the attack on Pegasus and Horsa Bridge in France. And that was done because of a young lad knew about this training down there, knew what they were used for after the war. And he got in touch with the mayor, I believe, and they got David Wood to go down there and put this plaque up. And it's still there now. But they are the same, similar in type to the bridges that we were going to use. And
what were they? Can you describe them? They were humpback bridges, or?
Well, one was an ordinary bridge, straight over bridge, and the other one was a sort of supposed to be a raised bridge, raising up. Which Pegasus Bridge does raise up over the what's that? The other one, Horsa Bridge, is just a straight bridge, an ordinary bridge.
Over rivers, over roads?
River and canal. And that was why we used them, actually. But they were guarded by Polish soldiers. And we had a train to take them, so there was a bit of bust up there, as you can well imagine. But one thing that stuck out was that while we were down there, they said one night, because it was all done at night time, and one night they said a platoon was told, well, if the bridges happen to be blown, we've got to get somebody over the other side. So now you're going to swim the river. So we had to strip off, put all our clothes in the ground sheet, latch it up with our toggle ropes, put the rifle on top, and wade in and swim across naked to the other side. And it was freezing cold.
Can you remember what time of year this was?
Oh, I can't remember now.
Winter of 43?
Well, it was cold nights, I tell you. It was a cold bloody time in the water. It was freezing. But we done it. Like everything else, we done it.
Officers as well?
Oh yes, no, didn't get away with nothing. Yes, it was good fun.
And so these bridges were guarded by Polish soldiers?
They were guarded by Polish soldiers.
Polish soldiers knew there was an exercise on,
presumably. Well, they knew there was an exercise on, and they were supposed to defend the bridges. But we, of course, it was simulated that we come in and land in a group, and then we go and attack these two bridges. It was very, very quickly over. They didn't know what hit them. They did not know what hit them. But it was all over and done, you know, and that was it. We trained. But while we were down in Exeter, unbeknown to us, apparently, and I never found this out until after the war, that Army girls and RAF girls were in civilian clothes, and they were going round all the different bars and that to see if there was any talk about what was going on, because the general population knew something was going on down there, and there was talk, so they went round to see if anybody was letting off what they shouldn't do. I didn't know that till after the war.
How did you find that out?
Well, I was talking to one of the fellas, and he said he'd read it. That was actually happened. They sent in these girls in civilian clothes to listen to what the conversation was and to report any loose conversation. We still didn't know. Still didn't know.
So you were down there for some time, so you were able
to... Well, yeah, not all that long. We done several attacks on the bridges, then we moved back after we'd achieved what we wanted to achieve.
And when you were down, in Exeter, were you allowed out in the evenings, or were you?
Only this one time.
When he came.
When
round?
when we got paid.
When the training was over.
Yeah, and we were allowed out to finish off. One night, he said, "You can go in," and he put an officer in charge to look after the boys in town, and he was as drunk as the boys. Oh dear, it was very funny.
Where were you billeted then?
We were billeted down, I think, with some old Le Combardier place that we'd taken over down there. It's pretty curious. But never mind, we had great fun. And then we came back to Bulford. And then...
Sorry, before we just go jump ahead to that, does the word Slapton Sands mean anything to you? Slapton Sands.
Slapton Sands... I remember what happened at Slapton Sands, that was yesterday. Apparently it was used by the American 29th Div for training on assault craft coming in, landing there. I actually have been down to that place with the 29th Div for a memorial service down there at Slapton Sands.
But when the disaster happened, were you conscious of it at the time? Because it was one of those things that was hushed up. Because you might have.
Well, it was hushed up a lot, and I don't think it was. I don't think it was during the war that I heard about it at the beginning. I think it was hushed up so much, but I know they lost a hell of a lot of men there.
800 men, I think.
Yeah.
And this was German E-boats that came in.
It came in off the coast.
It was the Navy that was, the British Navy that should have been there and wasn't.
It wasn't there, no.
But I thought because you were training down there at the same time, you might have heard inklings of
it. No, I've been down there, I've actually been down there three times. And the last time I went down there was for a presentation of one of the old American flags who'd been taken from the water by somebody. And they handed it over to the veterans of the 29th Div. A very solemn ceremony down there. And we actually went down to the beach at the bottom. And the Red Devers parachute team came over and dropped into the water. And they dropped a wreath as well. Hmm. Yes, I heard that, man.
I thought you might have heard inkling of it at the time.
No, it was hushed up. Never heard anything like that.
That's what I met people in Plymouth who were in Plymouth at the time, and they said they knew they heard vague inklings of it, but it was very.
It was such a catastrophe.
But it's not really relevant to this.
No, but they lost so many men there.
800, I think. Yeah. A colossal number. Anyway, so you've done your training on the two bridges at Exeter, you've done your cliff training.
Yeah.
We think now we're probably in the sort of early part of 44, would that be right?
Yeah.
Early spring of 44.
Yeah, well, went back to Bulford. And the next thing that happened then was we still didn't know what we were going to do. We knew in so much that it was something to do with bridges. That's all we knew. And we'd not been told anything where we were going or anything else. And then one day, it was late afternoon, we were all loaded into trucks, my company. Which was four platoons.
How many men were there? I'm sorry, I'm not...
29 men in each platoon.
So that would have been about, say, 130 men.
Yeah. The actual operation, there was 181 men.
And that's D Company?
That was D Company plus two platoons of C Company.
Who you also trained with or not?
Yes, they was all trained with us. Mm-hmm. They trained with us all the time. And then we were all put in TCVs, and we were taken, and when we got there, we were put behind a barbed wire encampment.
And where was there?
That was not far from a place called Tarrant Ruston.
Which is, I'm sorry, don't...
Dorset. And we were behind this barbed wire, all the tented encampment, and there was... armed guards patrolling the outside of the wire. And we weren't allowed to talk to anybody or do anything. And then we were told what we were going to do. We were told that we were going to go into France on D-Day, which should have been the 4th of June, which would eventually actually been my 21st birthday. We were going to go in there and we were going to do a silent approach, and we were going to capture and hold two bridges in France. They weren't called Pegasus Bridges in them days. They'd take these two bridges and hold them at all costs. We were to be relieved and helped out by the 7th Para Battalion, who were to come in later. So we were in there, and they said, now you can go and see what you've got to do. And they had a marquee inside the campment, and laid out in there was a perfect model of the two bridges with all the trees, everything else there. And we were allowed to go up there as many times as we wanted and study this layout. And we knew that that's that. Then we knew that that job was what we was going to do. And we were there for about 2 or 3 days, I suppose. Must have been. And we were issued out with escape kits, maps, compasses, buttons, compasses. Money.
What kind of money?
A French money. Which most of the boys lost playing cards. But and we had maps, like silk scarves with a map on. And all that sort of thing.
And what was the atmosphere like in the camp then?
Oh, high. Everybody was keyed up, raring to go. Want to go. Let's go and do it. We've been... All this training we've done... All over the time that we've been doing it. This is what we were done for. This is our job. We've got to do it. And we will do it. We'll do that job. And although the feeling was at the time that it was probably a one-way mission. Because we were going to go in. We didn't know at the time, but we were going to go into France. And they weren't even going to land on the beaches until the next day, in the morning.
Will you explain the strategic importance of the bridges?
Oh, yes.
Which was?
Yes, they said, because without the capture of the bridges, the Germans could get their armour over and attack and roll it up along the beaches. They could attack and roll it up. So it was most essential. It was the most essential part of the whole of D-Day invasion, was those two bridges had to be taken and held.
And these were road bridges?
Yeah, right. To get stuff over.
Were you allowed?
The RAF went in and took out all the other bridges. But we needed them bridges ourselves to get our troops up from the beaches and over and go inland.
How far away were they from the beaches?
I don't know. Six miles. 6 mile from Wistrom, where they landed. And as I say, we were there. And then one evening, they said, it was on the 4th, they were going to black out. You've got to black up. So we blacked all up ready. And then we got the message through that it had been put back 24 hours. So the next night, again, we about all got in the TCVs. And we went to Terrant Ruston. And there were 6 gliders on the tarmac at Terrant Ruston. And we loaded up with the 6 platoons. Major Howard came along and said, good luck, boys, see you the other side. And at about 10 to 11, we took off. And we crossed the French coast at about 5,000 feet, and cast off. We were being towed by Lancaster bombers. And the bombers then went on to bomb Caen to make out that it was a bombing raid going in. The glider pilots then had to navigate, and all they had was a stopwatch. And they flew at so many seconds on one course, turned and what have you, and that's how they negotiated it in. I was in number five glider. A number five glider landed on the, which is now called Halser Bridge, the other side. Major Howard was in number one glider. His pilot put his glider right through the barbed wire up against the bridges. When you land like that, you come down at such a speed and shock, you're actually out of it for a few seconds. And then you come to, and then you're out, and you're in, you know, away. So we landed there, and we took both bridges, which had approximately 50 men guarding them.
Hang on a sec. I just want to go down to the actual... Your glider, number five, landed.
Yeah.
And did it stay in one piece? Did it break apart?
It broke up a bit, yeah.
Anyone was injured?
Yeah, not a lot, but it broke up a bit. But we hit an air pocket coming down, and it bounced. And we landed on the skids and that, you know, and we got out. We shook up for a minute. We got out, and we found that we were quite a little bit short of where we should have been. So we all piled out and then made a mad dash for the bridge.
You could say, once you were there, you immediately were able to orientate yourself.
Oh, yeah, because we knew exactly where everything was. We'd studied that so much. To even a tree, we knew where it was. And we rushed in. And within 15 minutes, both the bridges had been taken.
What opposition did you face?
Well, there's some opposition. But we were so quick and so silent, they didn't know we were coming. I mean, a lot of them were shot where they were in the bunkers, you know. And
what were your instructions to do?
Just take them.
Kill them?
Oh, yeah. Well, we didn't have we had no point in taking prisoners. How can we take prisoners?
So if you went, can you describe what your individual experience was of taking the bridge? You're out of the glider, you're with your Lieutenant Sweeney?
Yeah. Well, we made a dash for the bridges.
Under fire? Were they firing at you?
No. The one we took, we had no fire at all. There was actually nobody on the bridge when we took it. But Pegasus Bridge, there was more soldiers down there, and they had a gun encampment, and they had a pillbox. And there was three killed down there. And 13 wounded on Pegasus Bridge.
Of the British side?
On our side. Three killed and 13 wounded. And that was out of the whole lot. That's all we lost on the taking of the bridges. And we cleared them all out, the dugouts and what have you. Well, it didn't take no prisoners, of course.
No, of course, no. After the facts. So the bridge you're on has no troops on it.
No, we were lucky. So we took it and we held it there. And then we heard a vehicle coming along the road, motorbike. And this DR rider came along the road, followed by an open Mercedes, one of these big German Mercedes cars, open thing. And it was the officer who was in charge of the defence of the bridges. He'd been on a night out. And he's coming back. And we let him just get on the first part of the bridge, and then we opened up. And the dispatch rider went into the ditch, killed him. And both the driver and the officer were badly wounded. A gentleman by the name of Leck, I think his name was. And, of course, we dragged him out, and they treated him. The wounded, they treated the same as we would treat our own wounded. We didn't intend to wound, we intended to kill them, but we didn't. But we wounded them. And then they sent, of the one glider, it was six gliders for the operation, one glider with the second in command of the company landed on the wrong bridge. About 5 miles away. And they took the bridge before they realised it was the wrong bridge. They left there and they fought their way back to us, and they got back to us a couple of days later. So we only had five gliders actually on that bridge. But there was nothing going on up our end. So they decided to send some of us down to the main bridge, Pegasus Bridge, which I went down with some of the other boys to help them out down that end.
Was it quiet or were they still fighting?
Oh, there was still some sniper, lots of sniper going on. Sniper fire coming from all around.
So the Germans knew you were there by then?
Oh, they knew they were there by then. About an hour and a half after we landed, the Paris came in.
So let's get the time right. It's still night?
Yeah, we landed at 16 minutes past midnight. So you can say that at 1:30, the Paris had started to organise themselves on the drop and moved in to help us out. So we had a bit of relief to help us. And then it was still a lot of sniper fire, and we could hear tanks. And we thought, oh, Christ. If they're sending tanks in against us, we haven't got no chance at all. Well, it was two tanks started to come up the road. One was a tank, one was a half track with an 88 on board. And it started to come up. And we had a sergeant named Sergeant Wagger Thornton. He had the only Piat that we had. Now, a Piat is a thing that fires a Piat bomb, as you know. But bloody useless unless you can get up close. Well, he crawled along the ditch and he got right up close to this thing. And he only had the one Piat bomb, so he had to make sure he hit it right. And he hit it and he went up like a firework display. All the ammo went up and everything. Well, the other one turned tail and went back. And they must have thought that we got some heavy stuff up there, because they never sent any more in. And at the time, the Panzers were not far away from where we were. And apparently there must have been some, I've heard since, that it was Hitler that wouldn't let them be released and be moved forward. And they never came at us. So we were lucky there. But, yeah, that's what happened there. They blew that up and they held it. Well, we held them bridges then until they landed on the beaches the next day.
So the tank blew up. That would be in the early hours of the morning.
Yeah, the early hours of the morning.
3 o'clock. On the
nothing.
Morning of the 6th.
The morning of the 6th of June, yeah. Because we landed, although we took off at 11 o'clock in this country on the 5th, we actually landed 16 minutes past midnight. And
was it exciting to step on France for the first time?
Oh, yeah, well,
here I am at last.
Everybody said, well, we've done it, you know, we've got it. And then, of course, we worried then about whether they'd ever reach us, because we were being attacked at this time. Once the Paris come in, we were being attacked, and we were fighting a pretty rough battle down there.
How did you identify each other in the dark? Because if you had Paris wandering in, wouldn't they be mistaken for German troops? How would you...
We had call signs.
Can you remember what they were?
Yeah, well, the call sign for the bridges, I can remember quite well, was Ham and Jam. One bridge was called Ham, the other was called Jam. And after the taking of the bridges, the signal went out, Ham and Jam. That meant both bridges had been taken. And then after that, of course, we just said one or the other and we knew who we were.
So if you saw a dark figure coming out,
yeah,
we'd
say, well, you know, hammer jam, you know, give us a signal. But once the Paris came in, they're calling out in English, you know, it's us boys, you know, and all this, that, and the other. And they were lucky to come in to join us. And a good job they did, because on our own we would never have held it. Anyway, then the 5th Paris come in as well, so we had quite a lot of Paris there then.
Is it light by now? Is it light?
No, it's still dark. It was still dark. It was a moonlight night when we went in, very bright moonlight. It was still dark, and we kept saying to ourselves, I wonder if them buggers are going to get in on the beaches, if they're going to reach us. And then it was in the afternoon.
So you went through the whole day?
Yeah, went through right through the night. And right through till 2 o'clock in the afternoon of D-Day.
And there was quite a lot of shooting going on.
Oh, all the time, going on all around us.
Did you hear the barrage from the shooting?
Oh, yeah. The first thing we heard while we were there was the 16-inch guns firing from the Navy. And they put a creeping barrage up in front of the troops moving up from the beaches. And they were like express trains coming over. And we said, for Christ's sake, stop before you get to us, you know. But it was scary, very scary.
Could you see these?
Well, you could hear the explosions, but you couldn't see them. Anyway, yeah.
Were you hunkered down in you took over the dugouts? Or what?
Oh, yeah, we dug ourselves in alongside there, hidden beyond the bridge and that, you know. But it was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We were laying there. And I said to a friend of mine, Les Wood, I said, I can hear bloody bagpipes. He said, don't be silly, you silly bugger. I said, Les, I can hear bagpipes. You must be going out of your sweet mind, he said, suffering from shell shock. Wait a minute, he said, I can hear bloody bagpipes. And it was Lord Lovock and his commandos coming up, and Bill Mullen, his piper, playing all the way. And as they came over the bridges, we shout to him, get down, get down. He's striding up there with his walking stick and his sweater on, and his piper playing. And the first five or six commandos that walked over that bridge went down with a sniper. Because they didn't take notice of what we said. Because the snipers were picking them up, anything moving, they were picking them off. Well, they came right through, and then we were taken out. Once they'd come through from the beaches, we were pulled off them. We came in between the two bridges and a bit of waste ground, and we had our first rest.
So you'd been on the go then for approximately, what, 16 hours?
Yeah.
So this would have been late afternoon.
Late afternoon.
And when you all met up, were you then aware of the losses? And did Major Howard give you a little talk, or how did it work out that you?
Well, no, he just pulled us out the line. He said, "Righto, lads," he said, "we're going to have a rest now." He said, "We've done our job. We've taken the bridges. We're going to have our job to do. So we're going to have a rest now, and you can have a shut your eyes a bit." And we came out. And we settled in between the two bridges in a bit of waste ground there. And that was quite all right. It was quiet there. And we stayed there until in the afternoon, about 3 o'clock, I think it was.
Of the 6th?
Of the next, yes, in the afternoon of the 6th. The main rest of the battalion came in gliders and landed over, way away from us. Well, they landed over there. And then he said, well, we've got to rejoin the battalion then. He said, but we'll work our way up through Erivelet and Eskerville while we started off. And we started off moving up through. And we went through Erivelet, no trouble at all. French village, normal type of thing, no problem. No resistance. And we went...
Sorry, Doug Allen, Reel 4.